Football on Off the Ball.
Every player's journey looks different and there's different ways of going about it. So we have to make sure that we kind of help create the right journey for the right player.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Microphones over there, you join us. Welcome. Eamon McGee will be on the line to preview the Ireland football semi-final and the Donegal side of things, which we haven't got to yet. Greg Laidlaw, the former Scotland captain and Lions Taurus himself, will speak about yesterday's game and the build-up for this weekend. Also, Jenny Claffey live in studio to talk Wimbledon. The semi-finals are set and they're stacked actually with stars. And also our favourite duo, Owen Heary and Barry Murphy in the League of Ireland beat. They'll be in to discuss Shelburne's 1-0 win last night, their return to the Champions League for the first time in 20 years. We'll also talk papers. You're very welcome to Thursday morning's Off the Ball Breakfast. Delighted also to be joined by a man who, if he was on the Titanic crew, you can bet your last shilling he would have given up a seat on the lifeboat. It's a selfless Arthur O'Dea. Arthur, good morning.
That's a strange one.
That's just one of your many character traits, you know.
Yeah.
Paddy Talley.
Yeah.
Remarkable, really. I mean, there's so much we could talk about this morning. So we have the Club World Cup finalists confirmed, Paris Saint-Germain hammering Real Madrid. Yeah. Shelburne handily beaten Linfield 1-0. Scoreline suggests it was close. I think Shelburne were the superior side. Linfield didn't really pose too much of a threat. Then we have the Christian Horner news, which broke shortly after we left the show yesterday. But this one, Paddy Talley, kind of caught me because Derry never won a game under Paddy Talley in his 8 months in charge. But there are more maligned counties than Derry in 2025.
Yeah, it's a strange thing. We probably would have still thought he was doing a grand job. You wouldn't know nobody was forecasting that.
No.
It's like, oh, geez, bad year for Derry. It's like, nah, it all kind of makes sense within the context. Even you go back, like, even to the league, remember that game, like, they should have beaten Kerry. It was one of those early ones where Kerry got, like, 2-something. And the second goal, one of the goals came so quickly after another that the cameras weren't back yet from the replay of the first.
Yeah.
You have no idea how it had set up. But so very, very strange. And now an adding list of the growing counties looking for a manager.
It's quite substantial. So Paddy Talley leaves. So Derry are joined by Sligo, Antrim, Mayo, Roscommon, Dublin, Louth, Waterford and Cavan in looking for new managers. And we're still in season.
It's incredible. Incredible.
There are many John Duggins in the world, but there's only one John Duggan. He's in the studio.
There was a time, good morning, Colm and Arthur, that I went to my favourite pub and I met a guy from the United States, because you just get chatting sometimes when you've had a bit of lubrication from a Guinness point of view. And I met a guy called John Duggan from America. And John Duggan met John Duggan and we took a photo and everything. It was a lovely moment.
What does he do?
I think he worked in business or something. I mean, all Americans work in business.
They're all millionaires
working in business. And they get their, like, what, 10 days a year off. And they come over to Ireland and
looking for his roots.
John Duggan met John Duggan, so yeah.
Oh yeah, did he talk about his roots? His Irish roots?
He probably did.
Glazed over, did you, that part? Yeah, glazed over. For the podcast listeners, what are you wearing? What are you wearing this morning?
So Tottenham Hotspur, as we know, is very bare when it comes to trophies, although they do have one now. Yeah. They've got a lovely mega store, superstore, one of these stores that has got everything. They have actually, outside the new stadium, they have a mega store which has Irish scarves, Tottenham Irish scarves.
Right.
So there's you'd have an Irish flag as part of the scarf. And they've got some jerseys that are pretty cool. I remember when I was growing up, I loved the Italian jersey from 82, Marco Tardelli, Paolo Rossi. I loved the kind of the silky polyester that I saw on the television. And then I got it. Like, remember the 2010 World Cup? I got all this stuff ordered online. And it was all cotton. It was all awful stuff. It was like a cotton jersey. I was like, that's not the kind of the glossy, silky polyester that I'm wearing now. So when I saw this away jersey from 1986, the Tottenham, I think it was the third kit, it's kind of a dark blue kit, I said, I've got to get that. So I got it on mail order there a few weeks ago. So, and it has that kind of that sheen. And I also got the 88 Irish jersey recently. So yeah, I mean, retro tops are pretty cool.
That's very shiny.
Yeah, a bit of shine.
It's very cool. Was it cool at the time?
It was cool at the time. And that's when Tottenham used to go out in the FA Cup the first they go in the third or fourth round. I remember they're wearing this jersey one. I think they played, a light blue one when they played Port Vale. But they'd very rarely wear this one, but it's a pretty cool top. The next one I want to get is the Dutch ADA one. That's the one I want to get.
Oh, yes. Lack of navy represented, yeah. I think, in
had this discussion team many
sports.
Times.
Navy, beautiful colour.
It is, yeah.
Who plays in navy?
I remember I once met a guy, once again at the pub, who sold suits. And he says, I said, what's your colour? And I said, like, listen, I need a bit of a hand here because I've no idea about this kind of stuff. What's my colour? And he goes, navy's your colour.
Was he about to go on break and it was the first colour he saw?
He just goes, no, you're a navy guy. I said, okay, well, thank you. Next time I can afford a suit, I'll buy a navy one. Sorry, listeners and the audience here, we're going off in the...
No, this is good stuff.
Great,
this is good stuff, you know. Yeah, navy definitely underrepresented. Who plays in navy? Let us know. 0879 180 180, or type us in off the ball on YouTube. You'll see that we're live clicking us, and there you'll see three lads staring back at you. We were just talking about Paddy Talley before you joined us.
Yeah, look, with Derry, I mean, you don't win a game, but I think in the round robin they actually played quite well. They played well in the second half against Armagh, played well against Dublin, should have probably beaten Galway. And look, in the last few years, there's been a lot of flux in the county. And you think that they definitely have the players there to do better than they have been. Obviously relegated now to Division 2. So will they go for an outsider again? That's the question. And Derry, I mean, Derry, they won in a few Ulsters in the last few years, but for probably since the early 90s when they're that amazing All-Ireland winning team, they've only won one All-Ireland. They've been a county that has probably been dominated by the clubs, and the clubs have been the powerful thing in the county of Derry. So I was going through like the stats last night for Donegal and Meath, and it was 2003 that Donegal were in an All-Ireland semi-final, and then Jim McGuinness came along, and then they were in the first season in charge in the semi-final when they played Dublin in that infamous game.
Yeah.
And then Jim leaves, and this is the first... last year was the first semi-final in 10 years. So if Derry can get somebody in there, that can ignite them, then they definitely can do something, because it can be done. And Jim McGuinness has shown that. Like, Jim McGuinness comes, Donegal perform, Jim McGuinness goes, they don't, Jim McGuinness comes back in there. Like, it's literally immediately it's happened to Donegal. Literally, immediately. First season semi-final, win the Ulster again now, and fancy to beat Meath and being in the final.
Speaking of jerseys, Meath, Donegal, both sets of sides were supposed to wear away jerseys, right? This is correct? So Meath are supposed to play in yellow, all yellow, initially, which would have been a good omen for them, actually, because they historically do well to get to finals by wearing yellow. But it's been quite a while since they've done it anyway. But it's all ruined now. It's turned around. So they're both going to play in their well-known home colours. The referee feels there is not sufficient clash in order for either to change.
But Donegal away, is it white?
White. Yeah. So it'll be white against yellow. It would have been. That was initially going to be the case.
Here's a real look for all you anoraks out there. In 1994, Cork played Down in the All-Ireland semi-final. Down wore the Ulster Council.
Right.
It's a kind of a gold. It was the Ulster Council away jersey, or the Ulster Council jersey. It wasn't the kind of a Down away of that. I mean, I don't know if that's changed now, but that's what I remember the stat anyway. Now it might be that was definitely something about that they played in a kind of a gold and black. In 1994 in the semi-final.
The last time that Meath had worn yellow, they won the All-Ireland Senior Football semi-final against Kerry in 2001, 2-14.
I was there. Kerry have never gone back to Killarney and Tralee as quick as they did, the tail between their legs. But that was Meath's last hurrah at Croke Park.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Before the Galway game probably this year.
It's all ruined anyway. They're going to play in their home colours, Meath against
Donegal. But you talk about Navy. I mean, the Kerry blue, I mean, we've got the Paddy O'Shea in the studio there. The Kerry blue is beautiful. I mean, and even if you go on the Kerry Twitter page, it's like it's the blue jersey for whatever reason is there. Because Clare have got a nice blue away jersey. But that's not really Navy, is it?
No, Navy I'm talking about is very specifically, yeah.
Tottenham in the early 1960s had a very dark Navy away jersey, which is lovely. So, yeah.
I see some point now PSG there in the chat.
Paris Saint-Germain, yeah. Paris Saint-Germain.
Is that more of a royal blue than a Navy?
Oh, that's Navy all day, I'd say. Last night as well, they had it. They had their original there against Real Madrid in the semi-final with the red in the middle. They hammered Real Madrid. If people missed this, 4-0. They pounced on two Real Madrid errors to start off with, but someone wants to know your take on this, Arthur, actually, in the comments. All in the game. What did Arthur make of PSG's destruction of Real Madrid?
Didn't see it all in the game. Didn't see it.
They look totally, fairly frightening.
Yeah, not totally surprising.
No, and so we have the final set, Chelsea against Paris Saint-Germain this weekend in the Club World Cup final. Have you got into it at all?
Not at all. I don't believe in Gianni Infantino's vanity projects. I'm actually quite worried about the heat for this World Cup next year. I think there'll be a lot of complaints.
Do you remember the heat being an issue in 94, besides obviously Steve Staunton and the CAF and the national anthem and all that?
Yes.
But to the extent that games would be called off during...
Well, no, no, but for Ireland, it was like, I think once we went down to Florida, it was over for us.
Really. Yeah.
Even the Dutch game, we were struggling. I was struggling watching it. I was about 15. I was struggling sitting and having my bottle of Coke watching it.
But games are being interrupted, which I don't think happened then.
No, didn't, but it should have been. Yeah. And then we never should have played Mexico and Orlando. We were beaten before the ball was even kicked. Beaten before the ball was kicked. So, yeah, I mean, and even the World Cup in Spain in 2030, that's going to be fun. That's going to be fun this time of year. And we have a lot of late night matches. But have I got into the Club World Cup? Not at all. But look, if Al Hilal are beating Manchester City, what does that say about it? But like, I think the concept actually is an interesting concept. I don't have no issue with the concept, or if you did this every few years, if you did it in a way that didn't treat players like cattle, then it would be good. But it's just too much. And Jurgen Klopp has probably been the biggest voice on this, and he's been absolutely right.
Yeah. In South America, they seem to be quite happy with this, but at the moment, it's only once every 4 years.
We have a view that's skewed towards the Premier League.
Totally, and, yeah. And what depends where you are, isn't it?
Yeah, it depends where you are, but... you know, players deserve, because you're just going to see players break down. I mean, Rodri, didn't he play the Euros starts off the season last season? Gets an injury and he's only coming back now. So you want to see the best players in the best competitions. What are they for me? Premier League, Champions League.
Back page of the Irish Independent this morning. This is carried across a few publications. Ferguson moves close to loan deal with Roma. This is fairly exciting on paper. They have a new manager, of course. Gasperini isn't the former Atlanta lad. He's in there and assign him. So this is quite interesting for me, because I was actually looking at this morning. I was looking at Brighton's squad. So they've sold João Pedro.
What is this music?
This is for the newspapers.
Okay.
Yeah. It's in your mind. I can't hear what's
hot
going
music.
On. Yeah. So they got rid of João Pedro. They sold him Brighton. So I think there's one striker less now to compete with. And the Independent say, well, Fabian Hertzler has been busy this summer. They've invested in four players. So there's a Greek duo, there's a Belgian, and there's a young Italian. And I was looking up all four of them. The first two are 19-year-old strikers. One of them has been loaned back out. The other two are defenders. So I was thinking, sure, that's not going to make too much of a difference for Ferguson. And he doesn't have to deal with João Pedro. But by the looks of it, Hertzler isn't really having him. But at the same time, according to Aidan Fitzmaurice's piece here, Brighton don't want to sell him. They say he has a future at the club, so it's another loan deal for Ferguson.
Only story I want to see about Evan Ferguson is he's played the last 10 games. And he scored how many goals? That's the only story I want to see. Do you know, get me? Because there's so much talk about Evan Ferguson. There's so much newsprint. We're so hopeful that he's going to be the player that we think he's going to be. But you just want to see him playing regular first team football every week and scoring goals. And until that happens for me personally, you know, let me know when that happens, because that's what we want to see, rather than the speculation or this or that, whatever.
Is that an exciting move for you, though?
The only exciting thing about Evan Ferguson, wherever he goes, is that he's happy, he's scoring goals,
yeah,
and he's playing regular first-team football, and he's fit, and following the path that Troy Parrott did, not necessarily where he goes, but just more to get into that rhythm of being the striker that we hope he can be.
It's really hard to know.
So he's obviously rated, right?
Yeah.
He's rated. This is why we talk about him. This is why, you know, we're all getting a bit tired of talking about Evan Ferguson, but it's because we don't have that many strikers to talk about in the international stage, right? So West Ham took a chance on him. He knew Graham Potter. But obviously football sees something in this guy, that you go from a failed loan spell at West Ham, and that's what it was, in score, and do much. Mm. And now Roma are taking a chance on him, reportedly.
Yeah, and they're about, like, I suppose they're about to wait to see the play out, new manager, but about fifth, sixth best team in Italy. So it's an
But West Ham are the
there's obviously a good little bit of precedent now of players going from England to Italy, and even you go back to Gasperini, what they did with Luckman. So it's obviously culturally, I'd say it's probably a good fit if Gasperini, who I presume has some say in this, has spotted it, that it's kind of something that he wants. You suspect that it's not just being foisted upon him. But at the same time, and it's not too, it's not too much of a cliche, but like, I don't know if, I'd be interested to see how many clubs in Italy of players that aren't, say, superstars would have a guy that young leading the line either. I don't know if that would happen, if you know what I mean. It's very hard to imagine him going there and starting week in, week out. at that age unless he does something spectacular. And it, thus far, he's not really done anything spectacular over any period of time. So it's hard to know. Like, if he's going in there to be a squad player, I could see it being as... there's an equal chance that it goes well or incredibly frustrating. Because, I mean, the way as well kind of works there, there's no guarantee that Gasperini's there in 6 months if it doesn't start particularly well. So it's a fairly... there's a lot of flux in a move like that. I'd say there's a lot of it could go any sort of direction.
From the Premier League perspective, you're hoping it's Tammy Abraham's first season out in Serie A, but they've sold Tammy Abraham now to Besiktas, I think, so he's gone. Rather than say Robbie Keane to Inter 25 years ago, which he scored like one lovely goal where he flicked it over the goalkeeper, but he had a very short time at Inter. It didn't really affect them as much because Leeds took an opportunity on him on loan, and it was a great time to be a Leeds player under Dave O'Leary. Fast forward a quarter of a century and I'm not sure the options are there for Evan Ferguson.
You just want to see him flourish in a team where he's playing regular first team football and scoring goals again and having maybe a season that Finn Azaz and different types of players that Finn Azaz had at Middlesbrough. That similar thing where you're flourishing in a team and you're doing well and there's a progression and you're back to, you're getting back your career back on track because he had a lot of issues with injuries. He's a young player, young man. And even if, like, remember Spurs and Harry Kane out on loan to a load of clubs and it was good for him. So that's what you just want. You just want him to get back playing first team football and scoring goals, and it doesn't really matter at this age of his development if it's Roma, if it's Crystal Palace, if it's Leeds, if it's Burnley. You know, just, you just want to see him playing first team football and scoring goals.
7:46 a.m. on this Thursday morning. It is Thursday the 10th of July, which, John, that means the Genesis Scottish Open starts. $9 million on offer. Rory McIlroy playing.
Nothing to do with Phil Collins.
A 3 week hiatus with a new look. Rory McIlroy. Must be a new perspective.
He's got a haircut, yeah. And he's won this tournament before, Rory McIlroy. He hasn't played since the Travellers Championship 3 weeks ago when he came off the back of the US Open at Oakmont. So when he kind of backdoored into a top 20 finish. Next week's going to be fascinating. It's all about next week, really. It's because there's so much Gaelic Games action, so many amazing talking points with Cork and Tipperary, first ever All-Ireland hurling final. We've got the football finals. Meath, Donegal set to be a sellout this weekend. Kerry and Tyrone. That it's almost, the Lions is almost too much sport in a way at the moment. Like, in November, we'll be starved for this amount of sport that's going on simultaneously. And next week, we have a major championship on this island, Royal Portrush, 6 years after Shane Lowry won it. So I think for Rory, he's just getting his feel back into Lynx golf before. I mean, it's going to be great weather this week.
I think the last time the three of us were together in this very studio on this very show, you suggested that Rory McIlroy needed a break.
Yeah.
Is 3 weeks sufficient? Time will tell, of course.
Well,
what do you think?
Enough of a break to get a nice haircut, a different haircut.
It's mad that he got a new haircut because he already had short hair. I mean, how much can you do with a new haircut with short hair? But he managed to look remarkably different.
Yeah, well, and next week, obviously, he missed the cut there 6 years ago. Didn't start well, and then remember following him around on the Friday, and he just played with such freedom, and it was just, and everybody was following him around. It was a beautiful local thing, as it were, in Portrush. So it's for him, it's about tuning his links game to head of Portrush next week. So that we have a major championship on this island is still pretty very very special, but it's almost like it's just arriving on our doorstep without us even thinking about it and knowing it.
Yes,
because there's just so much going on everywhere else.
There is no Shane Lowry as well this week, right?
No, I mean, I expect, and I don't know, but I expect Shane Lowry is just tuning up his game for the defence of the only major he won 6 years ago, and he won it by, what, six shots back in 2019 when it was just one of the most magical stories you're ever going to see. It's still a magical story. It'll always be a magical story.
It was, yeah. It was Shane Lowry in the Open versus in 2019 versus Roy McIlroy at the Masters in 2025. Equally beautiful for very different reasons.
Different reasons, yeah. Well, an awfully... played Antrim in the 1989 hurling semi-final, and for an Offaly man to drive up to Antrim and to win the oldest major on our island when it hadn't been played there, it'd only been played there once in the 1950s. Was it 1949? Because I'm getting a bit mixed up with Max Falconer winning the Open. I think it was it 1954 or something like that? Anyway, 49 or 54 anyway. But Portrush had only hosted it once. And yeah, for the fact that Scotty Scheffler's coming over, you've all the Americans, Scheffler, you've all the top Americans coming over, John Rahm, DeChambeau, they'll all be there next week. just up the road. It's amazing. It's amazing.
Probably about as football as it gets on Off the Ball Breakfast this morning, says Cardi.
1951 was in Portrush. Sorry, 1951. I got there at the end.
John, no already, notes here. We've already discussed your apparel. They want to know what are you wearing this morning, Arthur?
It's just a t-shirt.
It's more than that. Usually we have non-branded black from Arthur, but there is something else going on. What is it?
It's just the Sligo Rovers crest.
I don't say just.
Is that a training top, Arthur?
It's a t-shirt.
Very kind of Manchester United, Ferguson training top. It's the black.
Yeah, in the mid-90s.
Yeah.
I was told here in our own comment section, our own personal private live doc, that the Latex Wigan Athletic sport a lovely navy number. But I do want to get to the bottom of this before we're out this morning at 9:30 or so. Who wears navy? Bordeaux, Scotland.
Bordeaux, great show.
Do New Zealand wear navy? Or black? Presumably black. Obviously in rugby they were, but I'm thinking soccer.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, right, Jesus.
No, they were white, don't they? New Zealand flick at the all whites.
I got a great shout here by our producer, Darragh Smith-Nachton, in the studio.
Dublin
Leinster,
keeper.
Leinster, of course.
Leinster.
And your...
Yeah.
Charity shouted that.
Yeah.
Say it again.
Dublin, Cluxton has worn a lot, hasn't he? He's often in the navy.
I don't count goalkeepers what they wear. Like, they're always wearing random colours. Like, goalkeepers just wear something that's different to the rest of them. Could be anything. There's no meaning behind it. But no one's taking a chance on navy. I can't keep my eyes off you, John, this morning, to be honest. It's a beautiful colour.
You've just run through a load of options.
Well, I think I did very well there.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's beyond the obvious. Beyond Scotland and Bordeaux, the two main ones, of course.
PSG,
yeah. But there's a bit of red there, too. I'm talking all-out navy. You know what I mean?
All right.
Yeah, Scotland is very much the navy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Especially the rugby top.
Spurs signing Mohamed Kudus, John, from West Ham United. £54.5 million. Is this something that excites you or is needed?
What I was excited about him at the World Cup. But West Ham, last season, less so. I mean, a lot of players you think would have excited you at West Ham, but I don't know. Where's he going to fit into the team? Not so sure. Kabuma was the one where you probably would have wanted to get. But then again, what would that have meant for Brennan Johnson on the right side of the attacking sphere? So where were they going to play Kudus on the left? Yeah, I don't know. Tottenham, I'm still, the jury's out for me. I saw that Daniel Levy interview talking about, we want to win the Premier League, we want to win the Champions League. That's all well and good. But how are you going to do that with the way structure you have, comparable to Arsenal and Chelsea, for example? So Thomas Frank, very happy with him. Talk about Wiese maybe in the frame, but Tottenham, to be honest, need a number six. That's what Tottenham badly need, a number six, and they need a stronger squad. And actually, how are they going to play? How are Mickey van de Ven's hamstrings going to be under Thomas Frank compared to Ange Postecoglou? So, look, the jury's out, and Tottenham are slow to do business generally, and I don't think that cuts it anymore. We see Liverpool, the amount of great business they did in the last few weeks, Kirkes and Verts and Ring Pong, and they have their act together. And even Arsenal, with Eze potentially going to the Emirates, Zubimendi signed, even Norgo as a backup option in the middle of the park. Will they get their number nine? They probably will. It just feels to me that Tottenham, in the determination to get a deal first as opposed to a great transfer first, sometimes can be their own worst enemy. And but I think that Thomas Frank, it's very straightforward. If you look at anything that he says and how he communicates, and if he says, well, I'm 100 million short, which I think he said to the people before, he probably tell Daniel Levy there's 100 million short. But until the club change their philosophy about spending money on players and the wage structure, and maybe, and if that needs to get equity into the club for that to happen, then I can't see Tottenham being much more than a club that has the ambition of finishing fourth.
I have a team here of can't get into it, right? Can never get into it when a Premier League club spends big money on a player from a middling Premier League club or lower. So Spurs signing Kudus, I'm like, I've seen enough of him in the Premier League to think I wouldn't be that excited from a Spurs perspective. And there's a lot of those type of transfers where I always feel better if I, this is illogical, right? If I haven't seen the player and they spend £54.5 million on a player, if Kudus was playing in Central Europe somewhere and they signed him, I'd be like, oh, there's good potential here. But I've seen enough of him, like, I don't know what else he can offer.
Not even the prospect of playing in a better team.
Yeah, I don't know why. I've always felt like that. Do you know what I mean?
I suppose it's just familiarity.
It's familiarity, like, and it's like, well, I think he's reached a ceiling, and I'm trying to think of players who go beyond. If they go to another club, who, like, what's the difference between Spurs and West Ham? A few places, realistically, in the league. How much better can Kudus get? They're spending an awful lot of money on him.
What's
the best case scenario here? Kudus becomes a club legend.
So are you feeling the same about Cunha?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, like, Manchester United are going back to what they did when Ferguson first took over. So he signed Gary Pallister from Middlesbrough, and Steve Bruce from Norwich, and Paul Parker from Chelsea, I think, or QPR.
QPR.
Dennis Irwin came in from Oldham, in fairness, weren't bad at the time. Brian Robson came in from West Brom even before Ferguson, Ron Atkinson days. And those signings, it's like, I can't get excited about that because I've seen them play at a middling level. I don't know how much better they can be. So when I saw this Kudus link, and it's the same with Noni Madueke to Arsenal from Chelsea, I can't get that excited about it. I think it's a huge risk signing the known.
Well, that makes no sense.
Well, I think a lot will depend. Well, Thomas Frankenstein is a very good coach. He's got good coaching staff with him, and maybe players can improve under the right coaching. I mean, you talk about those players. Sure, Bruce and Pallister were like almost like it was a name. Bruce and Pallister was a thing. So, yeah. I mean, Alex Ferguson definitely and his coaching staff definitely improved them.
They did. Sure, Thomas Frank could be the new Ferguson here.
Look, get a number six in and get support for Solanke. And get a consistent style of play, because I think the club's ambition, from all the sweet nothings that Daniel Levy was saying in his last interview, need to be married to reality. I wouldn't be as confident as if I was an Arsenal fan now. How far are Arsenal off winning the league next season? I wouldn't say too far if they get a number nine.
I'd like to say that Tim Horan, the Australian rugby legend, will be joining Greg Laidlaw too on the line later on to discuss the Lions. We're talking about not being able to get into the Club World Cup. Can you get into the Lions yet?
Not at all.
Do you have Lions 3? Not at all.
Absolutely not. No.
We've all the sports to talk about it. Nobody wants to talk about it.
I'm not into these games, but I love the Test match animal.
The Lions is the right. the Lions is the Ryder Cup.
Time boy.
It's the Ryder Cup. When the first test starts, you're absolutely consumed by it. And then you enjoy the three tests and then you forget about it. But all the stuff beforehand, I think it's just not helped with the fact that Australia are ranked eighth in the world. They're clearly the third best of the Lions tours to be on at the moment, because they're not the country that was dominant in the sport twice in the 1990s. And they haven't played very well, but they've had the quality player to win these tests down in Australia pretty comfortably. I suppose the more, like, in a way, it just feels like to me Andy Farrell's not hiding to nothing. They should be winning this 3-0. And how many Irish players are going to feature? I mean, we could be talking at least eight. I was going back through it, and I don't have a definitive answer on this, but in 2009, the second test, we had seven Irish players in the 15. Is he going to play the Irish centres over the Scottish centres? And if he does, and if Keenan plays, like, we're looking, we could be hitting double figures here. How are the British press going to react to that? We should be beating the Lions 3-0. I think the one thing that Australia do have is Schmidt. And he'll maximise what they can be. But do they have the players to be what they can be?
It's understandable that he picked half the team as Irish players yesterday.
Yeah.
In what looked like the strongest squad, because he's most familiar with them. So there would be a natural split in camp, probably. I mean, they'd be doing very, very well not to have it. It was like, he's the manager. Like, there's a huge cohort of a nation representing the Lions this year in which he manages, and he'll go back to that afterwards.
Yeah, Warren Gatland always used to do it. I mean, especially when it was on the line, that just seems to me like if you wanted to avoid that, hire someone who's not affiliated with any of them, or otherwise it makes perfect sense. Like, to be mad not to do that if your objective is to win rather than being some sort of truly representational side. But
I know, but it's funny, but in that world, he could feasibly pick 15 Irish players because he's so familiar with them, yeah, and they've proven that consistently.
Yeah, I mean,
better than Australia the last few years, and they're the best of the nations.
What is the legacy of winning against Australia in this Lions?
It's a shrug of the shoulders, I think. I think it's a job well done, fair play. We were talking about this before the show. It was like, the Lions is a mad concept, really, because when you look at it, it's essentially a summer tour, like a jolly up. That's the crudest way to describe it. But if you talk to any professional, it is the ultimate to represent the Lions, the absolute ultimate. But essentially, it's amazing for the ego, because what you're told is, like, you're the best of the best and you play. So it's an all-star 15, as Dara put it before we went on air this morning. That's what it is. That's what essentially it is.
But it also has a mythology about it, going back to, like, you know, the 19th century. So there's a mythology, like you're going on the boat for months and, you know, you send the postcards back and you're hearing all the stories and all the rumors and everything, and you're playing all these games. And the fact that New Zealand were this unbeatable team for so many decades, and to go down there and win was a big thing. And now it's just, the world has changed and it's a commercial beast that's very profitable. We saw in Dublin, it obviously has a massive constituency of supporters, which you can't in any way disrespect. So look, I'd say there's people out there going to Australia loving the rugby, but also having a great time. I'd love to go to New Zealand in 2029, but the Australia tour, because of the way Australia rugby is just less appetizing. So therefore, the actual test matches themselves don't have the same appeal when we're talking about, like, the same weekend of Cork, Tipperary, All-Ireland Hurling Final and the Open. Next weekend, the Lions is very clearly number three.
Next weekend's mad. It's the first test, the Open,
the Hurling Final.
All-Ireland Hurling Final. Nuts, mental. So we've established, right?
They open on Irish soil as well.
The Club World Cup, can't get into it. The Lions not having it.
I like the Lions. I was
looking at you. Wimbledon?
Well, Wimbledon is always special. But the thing about Wimbledon is, for me, that could we have predicted three of the four semi-finalists in the men's probably before the tournament even started? Now, the women's tournament has been a bit more unpredictable.
It's ridiculous the last 10 years in the women's, is no clear.
But Wimbledon generally is a second week thing for me. But I mean, anybody who turns on Wimbledon will be always captivated by it, because I think what I'm happy to see in men's tennis is that we now have a new rivalry, hopefully. It could be Sinner and Alcaraz again, and that's pretty tasty.
Sinner shouldn't even be there anymore, really. Like, Grigor Dimitrov, two sets to love up before he gets injured.
Changed his shoes yesterday, I saw.
Sinner had his own injury concerns heading into the match yesterday against Ben Shelton, and he beat him in straight sets. Ben Shelton's a very good American player who said, "I've never played against the pace of a player like Sinner before." Novakovic beat this young fella from Italy called Flavio Cabali in four sets. Cabali took the first set. Fun fact about Cabali: part of the Roma Academy.
Okay.
An unbelievably good footballer as well as a tennis player.
We're going to see Evan Ferguson on Wimbledon soon, are we?
Yeah, you'll get him sort of tickets for next year. But this guy looks tasty. So the semi-finals in the men's, right? And we'll talk about this later with Jenny, but just to set the scene for people who don't know, the Yannick Sinner against Novak Djokovic is one semi-final. Unbelievable. The other is Carlos Alcaraz against Taylor Fritz. Taylor Fritz is seriously good on grass. That's an amazing lineup. Today in the women's as well, you have Aryna Sabalenka against Anisimova, and then Belinda Bencic, former gold medal winner at the Olympics, against Iga Swiatek. First time ever she's into the semi-finals of Wimbledon. So we're set to have a Sabalenka against Swiatek final and Sinner against Alcaraz. This is the ultimate.
Wimbledon will always be there. You know, it'll always be the same to a degree. So it's like when you're young, you watch Wimbledon and then you're out on the street or in the...
Tennis for 2 weeks.
You're playing tennis for 2 weeks. Not very well, but you're playing it.
You fancy a game, John?
Go on.
Who gets it first?
Who gets it first?
What's this now? It's a great question. So I name a player, or sorry, I name a clubs of a player, and you have to guess the player by the clubs that I name. So this week is a tough one. It's a tough one, but it's a well-known person in football. I hope that's the hint. I'm asking about this person's playing career.
I'm no good at this. Go on.
Started at, his first club was Barnsley, and his last club was Millwall. I don't know if that helps you.
Mick McCarthy?
There you go. Job done.
Wow. We're 2 minutes ahead of schedule now in the show.
They haven't even got...
That's ridiculous. I'm no good at this. Was your fate last
week? Well, generally not. So I just got it as beginner's luck.
Can you name his club in between Barnsley and Millwall?
Celtic. Manchester City.
Yeah.
Did he play for any other clubs? He played in France.
He did. That's the club you're missing.
Was it Lyon?
It was indeed Lyon.
Okay.
And the clubs he managed: Millwall, Ireland, Sunderland.
Wolves.
Yeah, take it over.
After Wolves... Well, yeah. I don't know an order. I know he managed Ipswich.
He did? That is an order.
Okay. After Ipswich.
Managed Cyprus. Was it Nicosia?
Oh, Nicosia.
Applewell.
Yeah, you're missing something.
Ireland in between.
Ireland in between. And two left. And I had forgotten about one of these completely well-known clubs.
Sunderland?
No, not Sunderland again, no. The only thing he did twice was Ireland.
Hold on a second here. Mick McCarthy managing clubs, because we have a bit of time here.
There's Blackpool.
There's Blackpool as the last club he ever managed in 2023. And in 2021,
Cardiff City?
He managed Cardiff City.
There you
okay, call him.
He managed Cardiff City. So that's your lot. I have a lot of Navy shouts for jerseys.
Is there only one of those, is there?
That's it.
I have another one.
Okay.
I don't think you're going to get it, but I can do it. I'll do it for you since you're in specially for us today. This is tough, but this person's in the news this week. That's why I brought it up. All right. First club, Newell's Old Boys. And the last club was Newell's Old Boys. So, firstly, this player went from there to Valladolid in Spain. Had a loan spell at Sporting. Then signed for Paris Saint-Germain. And if I tell you his next club, you'll get it straight away.
Angel Di Maria?
Angel Di Maria is incorrect, but you have the right nationality.
Yeah, well, Newell's Old Boys, I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
Argentine.
It's not Poch, no?
It is not Poch. It is not Poch, Tino. But this person is in the news this week because it's of the coaching variety that he's in the news. Let me check YouTube here, see if anyone has this.
Paris Saint-Germain.
Paddy Talley?
Paddy Talley, no. Paris Saint-Germain, yeah. And then next, this is fastest finger to the button here. Manchester United. Fountain of 7-4 and got it, just as I was completing the sentence. Gabriel Ence, who has just been appointed assistant coach at Arsenal.
Right.
This week. He went from Paris Saint-Germain to Manchester United, and from there, he went to
Real Madrid.
Real Madrid, after pining for a move to Liverpool, and then went to Marseille and Roma, the club team of the morning so far, and finished up at Newell's Old Boys. Thank you very much for playing a very special episode of Who Gets It First.
Well, funny enough, I was in Rome last month, and the guy who was really helpful in the hotel was this team that he supported were Newell's Old Boys.
I'd say that heat was brutal enough, was it?
Just on the right side.
Okay.
Just on the right side.
Good grief.
10 years' time. Ooh.
Last night on Off the Ball, there was this.
It's a Barbarians team, essentially, you know, with a higher price than just a normal Barbarian side. I think there's just a tentativeness. I think you can see it. There's a tentativeness still in that, you know, midweek side or this, you know, warming up side.
And this.
Your own. I'm a little confused by this interaction here.
Well, it's still.
Did I come on here so you can tell me how amazing Katie Taylor is and try to diminish Amanda Serrano? Or do we come out here to talk about this amazing moment for women's boxing? Do we come out here to talk about that there's two unified championships and three undisputed championships next Friday night?
If you missed anything, you can catch it now on the Go Loud app or join us live every weeknight from 7 p.m.